The Showbiz Slot with Nathan Head.
Today I'm going to be talking about one of my favourite ghost stories, Blythe Spirit. Blythe Spirit's a play written by Noel Coward.
Now I should like to sing you a song that I wrote very long ago and far away. It's called Mad Dogs and Englishmen. In tropical climes, there are certain times of day when all the citizens retire to tear their clothes off and perspire. It's one of those rules that the greatest fools obey, because the sun is far too sultry and one must avoid its ultraviolet ray. Papalaka, 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 boo, that's natives. The natives grieve when the white men leave their huts, because they're obviously, definitely nuts. Mad dogs and Englishmen go up in the midday sun. The toughest Burmese bandit can never understand it. In Rangoon, the heat of noon is just what the natives shun. They put their scotch or rye down and lie down. In the mangrove swamps where the python romps, there is peace from 12 till 2. Even caribous lie around and snooze, for there's nothing else to do. In Bengal, to move at all is seldom, if ever, done. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday, 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 out in the midday sun.
Noel Coward was an English playwright, composer, director, actor and singer, known for his wit and flamboyance. In the 1950s, he achieved fresh success as a cabaret performer, performing his own songs such as Mad Dogs and Englishmen, which you just heard, and Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage, Mrs. Worthington. He also wrote the famous song Mad About the Boy. Noel Coward was behind the story that Brief Encounter was based on, called Still Life, but as I mentioned earlier on, my personal favourite work of his is Blythe Spirit. It was first produced at the Manchester Opera House, and then had its West End premiere at the Piccadilly on July 21st, 1941.
Almost immediately after it had been written, within a week, during a holiday in Port Merion.
I see myself, having got a job, walking on wings along the Strand, uncertain whether to laugh or sob, and clutching tightly my mother's hand. I never cared who scored the goal, or which side won the silver cup. I never learned to bat or bowl, but I heard the curtain going up.
On the first night, there was an enormous bomb crater right outside the theatre, and the smartly dressed audience had to pick its way over the rubble to get in. The story concerns socialite and novelist Charles Condamine, who invites an eccentric clairvoyant, Madame Arcati, to his house to conduct a séance, hoping to gather material for his next book. The scheme backfires when he's then haunted by the spirit of his mischievous first wife, Elvira. The plot thickens when neither Charles, Arcati, or even Elvira knows why or how she's returned to our world.
I'm afraid I don't know the technical term for it.
Oh, where have you come from?
You know, it's very peculiar, but I've sort of forgotten.
Well, you'll be here indefinitely. I've been married to Ruth for 5 years and you've been dead for 7.
Elvira makes continual attempts to disrupt Charles's marriage to his second wife, Ruth, who cannot see or hear the ghost.
Why should having a cheese thing for lunch make me see my deceased wife after dinner?
Never know, it's rather rich.
The play was first seen on the West End in London in 1941 and set a new long-run record for non-musical British plays of 1,997 performances. Coward adapted the play for film in 1945, starring Rex Harrison and the fantastically zany Margaret Rutherford as Madame Arcati.
I'm afraid I'm rather late, but I had a sudden presentiment that I was going to have a puncture, so I went back to fetch my pump. And then, of course, I didn't have a puncture at all.
Well, perhaps you will on the way home.
A musical adaptation called High Spirits was also directed by Noel Coward on Broadway in 1964. Here is Shirley Bassey singing a song from the musical called You'd Better Love Me, which is performed by the character Elvira just after she reveals herself to Charles. Bassey recorded this track live in 1966.
You'd better love me while you may. Tomorrow I may fly away. I need your gentle touch, that continental touch, that elemental touch, and you want me to, and I know that you do. You'd better love me while I'm here. Tomorrow I may disappear, so don't let this miracle. The clock ticks fast above me. If you think for me, plenty of me. You better love me while you may. You better love me while you may. Tomorrow I may fly away. I need your gentle touch, your continental touch, your elemental touch, and you want me to, and I know that you do. You better love me while I'm here. Tomorrow I may disappear. So don't let this miracle melt away. The clock ticks fast above me. If you think fondly of me, you'd better love me while you may.
Wild Spirit's also been adapted for television many times over the years. Some notable performances include Lauren Bacall and Mildred Natwick in the 50s, Peggy Mount was in the 60s, she played Madame O'Carty. There was even a radio version with Hattie Jakes. More recently, Angela Lansbury picked up her fifth Tony Award for her portrayal in the 2009 Broadway revival at the 63rd Tony Awards.
Who knew? Who knew at this time in my life that I should be presented with this lovely, lovely award. Thank you to all of my co-stars in Wild Spirit, our producer, Jeff Richards, everybody in concern. Thank you for having me back.
You love midnight movies, don't you? But can you handle midnight movies 24 hours a day?
Your death will be indescribable.
Find out on Black Flag TV. The first viral television on the web, Black Flag TV is entirely dedicated to haunting horror, science fiction, and cult movies. Broadcasting live, 24 hours a day, obscure independent movies and classic horror. Make Black Flag TV your sanctuary for the horror genre.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Visit us now, blackflag.tv.
Out and about with Nathan Head.
I can just have a few minutes. I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of Nathan Head.
You will burn in the everlasting fires of hell. You wicked, evil. There's no love in heaven or earth for you. Nothing for you but pitiless damnation for the rest of your life. Think on it.
We're going to go a bit prehistoric with the Jurassic Park series. The Jurassic Park franchise is a series of books, films, comics and videos centering on a disastrous attempt to create a theme park of cloned dinosaurs. It began in 1990 when Universal Studios bought the rights to the novel before it was even published. The book was so successful, as was the 1993 film adaptation, that it led to two more sequels. The software developers Ocean, Blue Sky, Sega and Telltale Games have had the rights to develop in video games since 1993, and numerous games have since been produced.
I recall the time they found those fossilized mosquitoes, and before long they were cloning DNA. Some irate velociraptors. Well, believe me, this has been one lousy day. Jurassic Park is frightening in the dark. All the dinosaurs are running wild. Someone shut the fence off in the rain. I admit it's kinda eerie, but this proves my chaos theory, and I don't think I'll be coming back again. Oh no! I cannot approve of this attraction, 'cause getting disemboweled always makes me kinda mad. Tyrannosaurus ate our lawyer. Well, I suppose that proves they're really not all bad. is frightening in the dark. All the dinosaurs are running wild. Someone let T-Rex out of his pen. I'm afraid those things will harm me, 'cause they sure don't act like Barney, and they think that I'm their dinner, not their friend. Oh no!
In the original novel, the character John Hammond proudly says that the narrator on the pre-recorded park tour is Richard Kiley.
The voice you're now hearing is Richard Kiley. We spared no expense.
Later, Kiley was actually hired to play himself in that role for the first movie. Possibly the only instance of a celebrity appearing in a book and later cast as him or herself in the film version.
If you look to the right, you will see a herd of the first dinosaurs on our tour, called Dilophosaurus.
The second movie, The Lost World, explains that there was a Site B, where dinosaurs were also being kept. The movie picks up 4 years after the events of Jurassic Park. Dinosaurs have secretly survived and been allowed to roam free, but a mercenary group decides to capture and bring the dinosaurs back to the mainland. John Hammond, who has lost control of his InGen company, sees a chance to redeem himself for his past mistakes and sends an expedition led by Dr. Ian Malcolm from the first film to reach the island before the mercenaries get there. The two groups confront each other in the face of extreme danger and must team up for their own survival in a race against time.
A British family on a yacht cruise stumbled upon Site B.
And now it's only a matter of time before this lost world is found.
Hopefully we've kept this island quarantined and contained, but I'm in shock about all this.
Jurassic Park 3 takes place on Isla Sorna, the second island from the second film. After a divorced couple tricks Dr. Alan Grant to help them find their son on the island.
I have a proposition I'd like to discuss with you. I've chartered an airplane to fly us over Isla Sorna, and we'd like you to be our guide.
But the group gets stranded there and have to find a way to stay alive from the quickly evolving dinosaurs.
But in this forbidden place, where man has tampered with nature, something unexpected has evolved.
The film finishes on a very open note with the viewer seeing the winged pteranodons flying off out to sea to make a new nest on another island, proving that the dinosaurs yet again live on for another possible sequel and reminding us of what Dr. Malcolm said all those years ago. If we could only step aside and trust in nature, life will find a way.
Jurassic Park is frightening in the dark. All the dinosaurs are running.